Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things this week?
A little bit wet in Cornwall, but very good, Graham.
Good. So this is another edition of Wiretaps, and this is our Wiretaps episode for Monday, December 23rd. And boy, we just came off of a crazy week, as many of our listeners know. It was a kind of round one decisions week. You know, we had Wharton, MIT, UT Austin, Ross, Duke, UCLA, Cornell, Indiana, Foster, and even Siebes. So we had a lot of schools giving decisions last week. You were on the front lines, as I mentioned last week, because we did this, you know, there's kind of a, it's been a couple weeks in a row with lots of decisions, but a lot of good news and seems like some waitlisting and stuff. But what do you make of what's been going on?
Yeah, it's always a very exciting time of year for us. See the activity on Livewire principally at this point. But yeah, I mean, it's great. You know, all the hard work the candidates put into this process and their relief and excitement for those that have the positive decisions. And then obviously there's a few that are now in the waitlist scenario and they've got to sort of, you know, make plans for that. And then there are others that will be sort of planning a round two strategy. But overall, I think there's a sense of sort of, you know, excitement that the first stage of the game is sort of through, which is fantastic.
So a lot of people are asking themselves, like, now what? You know, obviously the holidays are coming up and we hope everyone has a healthy and happy holiday season. But I think, you know, there are two things that come to my mind, and you mentioned one of them, which is in many cases, candidates are looking at round two. Either they, you know, struck out in round one or they did really well in round one and are thinking, wow, I didn't aim high enough, or some combination. You know, so people, you know, round two is challenging in that the deadlines are all right after the holidays. So some of you who are listening may be hard at work on essays and other things, and we have all the resources on the site there to help you with our essay topic analyses and things like that. So that's a big thing. The other thing that we've seen a pretty abrupt uptick in activity on is DecisionWire. And, you know, on our website, most folks know you can share your results and get feedback. And we've seen a whole load of DecisionWire entries coming in where people are kind of saying, here's where I got in and I don't know where I want to go. And so we've been trying to help out there along with other members of our community chiming in. So I definitely encourage people, if you've got your final results out of round one, post a DecisionWire, let us know how it went, how much money you got, you know, what you want to do post-MBA, and Alex, myself, other members of the Clear Admit team, and even just community members on the site will weigh in and give you their two cents. So, yeah, we love doing that. We're actually going to break down another DecisionWire entry in this episode. So, but yeah, so head over to DecisionWire if you can. The other thing I wanted to call people's attention to, we did a couple of great articles on the site, and I know, you know, you're listening to the podcast, but to the extent that you can get on the site at some point during your day, we did a Real Humans piece on UT Austin, the McCombs School. We've got a really interesting report on Stanford's career stats because they just released their annual career report, which, you know, kind of through the roof in terms of how people are being compensated. And then we have a whole series that actually, Alex, was, I think it was your brainchild, the sort of 21 days to go. Do you want to just mention kind of what that is for folks who are listening?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, the round two deadlines for most schools anyway come right after the new year. So we're 21 days out for many of those schools, and each of those posts will include all the resources we have for each of the schools that have those deadlines. So you mentioned the essay topic analyses, but there's a whole lot of other content there that can really help you sort of fine-tune your essays and sort of your preparation and so forth.
Exactly. So yeah, check that out on the site. And you know, before I forget, Alex, as you know, we now have a sponsor for the podcast. You and I were both shocked by this news, but Bain & Company is our new sponsor. And I wanted to just encourage everyone to check out Bain & Company's new podcast, which is called Beyond the Bio. Keith Bevins, who's the head of consultant recruiting at Bain, a very important guy for our listeners, he sits down with some extraordinary Bain people and gets insight into deeper questions like, you know, how does a former teacher continue to pursue her passion for education while working at Bain? And why did a successful startup founder return to Bain years after leaving? So subscribe to the Beyond the Bio podcast at the link in this episode description. And yeah, we encourage everyone. I've actually now listened to an episode of it. It's a great podcast. So head on over, give it a listen. We love what the guys are, what they're all doing over at Bain. And yeah, just a pleasure to have them as a sponsor. So Alex, should we dive in and get into our profile reviews?
Jive in or dive in. Sounds good to me.
Okay. So let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number one. So this is a post to ApplyWire. And it comes from someone who's hoping to start next fall. And this candidate has been working in investment operations and investment product management. And post MBA, he wants to get into asset management or maybe a hedge fund. And the companies that he's targeting are BlackRock, Fidelity, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Asset Management, State Street, and some others. So numbers are a GRE score of 327, GPA 3.67, and this candidate has 9 years of work experience and is located in Southern California, hoping to stay in California after business school. So I have to say, in the notes, this person mentioned that they love the podcast and are hoping to be featured. And they made a really good point, which was they said they've listened to many wiretaps and they cannot remember listening to a candidate with the amount of work experience that they have. And just some more details, this person's 31, white male, again, living in California. So like 9 years of experience and, you know, a whole bunch of data that they shared in their notes. But Alex, what do you make of this candidate? Because it is true, I don't think we've spoken about someone with this length of work experience on a wiretaps. And it's a common question, so we should tackle it.
Yeah, I mean, I think someone with 9 years of experience, in a general sense, there are two or three things that sort of stand out when you're putting your applications together, whatever your career goals and whatever schools you're targeting. So this is more general advice. One is I would sort of assume that with 9 years experience, the candidate should have lots of good stories to show real impact in the workplace. If you've been in the workplace 3 or 4 years longer than the average, then clearly you should have been successful in those additional years, just like candidates and more generally. So hopefully this candidate has some really good stories to tell and can really show that high level of impact and so forth. Another sort of major issue with candidates that are a little bit older, Graham, is the notion that they're going to go to the school, we talked about this a little bit before we came on air. They're going to glide through, focus solely on their career goals in mind and not really truly engage in the full breadth of the MBA experience. And I throw that back to you, Graham. You know, we obviously met when you were a student at Wharton and I was working in the admissions office. Your memories of the older candidates in your classroom, what sort of stood out about those folks?
Yeah, I think they fell into two camps. And the admissions team, I think, preferred one of them. But, you know, when you're an admissions officer, you don't know exactly what you're getting until they show up on campus. So there was the camp of older candidates who, it was like they were just so thrilled to be back at school and dove kind of headlong into everything that was, you know, available for the taking. And we're getting a lot out of it, you know, joining clubs, you know, just being on campus all the time, really like kind of just reveling in all that it was to kind of go back to school. But then there was another group and, you know, sometimes they were, you know, candidates who, I mean, in the research that we've done actually with some business schools, we would call them kind of goals-driven ghosts. So they come in, they know what they want. They spend a lot of time, you know, just kind of focus on the recruiting process and getting the education they need, but maybe doing less with kind of learning teams or, you know, just sort of social stuff or joining clubs, et cetera. And so, you know, that's the fear that an admissions officer has when they look at an older candidate. There is another fear that I'll mention while we're kind of on this subject, which is, will the candidate get the job they want? So sometimes you see a candidate with like 10 years of work experience coming into business school saying, I want to do, I've been working in like IT or whatever, and I want to go and become an investment banker in New York City. And, you know, on some levels, those jobs, those grueling post-MBA investment banker jobs are, they're not really well suited to people who are kind of already, you know, well into their 30s. And so it there can be kind of a clash of like what, you know, companies are looking for. And so it's important for an older candidate to have realistic, kind of feasible career plans, in my mind. Schools won't say this and companies certainly won't say it on the record, but I think that there's some you know, age bias, right? So I think it's important for a candidate to show that they've done the homework and are excited about coming back to school.
Yeah, and that was one of my pieces of feedback to the candidate, and we've had a bit of dialogue on ApplyWire, is to be prepared and understanding, because the candidate wants to take on an analyst role, right, post-MBA, of the long, grueling hours that that would entail. Their comeback was they're fully aware of that. So simply being fully aware of that, Graham, is that enough to overcome that sort of stigma, as it were, that potential bias against the older candidate?
It helps. I also think, I mean, this person has been working in the investment domain, even though more on an operational kind of product management side. So I would hope that that would help. One thing I'm remiss, I did not mention what schools they're targeting, but basically they're targeting the M7 with the exception of Kellogg. So they've got Columbia, Harvard, MIT, Stanford, Chicago, and Wharton. And our, you know, in the dialogue that you had with them, we settled that the numbers are fine. 367 from a decent school is fine. 327 on the GRE is fine. I'm not worried that they took the GRE versus the GMAT. It's a great score, so I think it should be fine. But yeah, there's this issue of them showing that they can fit in. And I think also within the M7, if you look at the average ages and things like that, some schools are more inclined to take experienced candidates, or more so than others. So I think MIT, Wharton, maybe even Booth tend to err on the side of being fine with extensive experience. Stanford and Harvard, maybe a little less so. I mean, the average age sort of bears that out. So just something to keep in mind. I was a little puzzled by the fact that Kellogg wasn't on the list, but I know, you know, it can only apply to so many. And you pointed out you were puzzled that there were no California schools other than Stanford on the list, given that that's where they want to end up.
Yeah, they're kind of M7 or bus type program, recognizing yeah. or believing that that's really important from a networking standpoint, I guess, in the industry, in asset management or whatever it is that they're planning to do. That's risky in of itself, because if you're not quite M7 caliber, by applying only to M7, you get blanked everywhere where you could have got good options in schools just on the periphery of that group.
Right. And this person doesn't have time to waste, really. Right.
No,
so yeah, I would not want them to reapply.
No. I will say I do like the extracurricular activities here too. Endurance athletics, triathlons, that kind of stuff, raising funds, charitable funds. So that side of it's really good. Graham, I think you have a better sense of the quality of their work experience, and it sounds like to me it's good work experience. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, they've been, they've had a lot of it, but I think it's ample experience. I'm not worried about that. I couldn't help but think when I read the profile that this person is clearly a go-getter. I mean, they're motivated. You don't see a lot of people in their early 30s are kind of, you know, they've already written off grad school or something. So this person's motivated, and I was sort of like, if you're motivated, would it, you know, could you achieve your goals by going to, you know, Yale or Stern, or even, you know, Berkeley? I mean, I feel like they probably could. I feel like they might be overestimating the weight of the brand. And that's not to say, I mean, it's so rare to see someone only applying to M7 I wish it were more rare. People need to spread their odds a bit. And I was sort of like, wow, couldn't this person get these kinds of jobs, especially, I mean, they say they want to be in California, but I mean, I would think maybe at least initially there could be some work out in New York in this domain. So I don't know. That's my take. But I like the candidacy. And I think they, as long as they go in eyes open and show that they're going to fit into these schools and be really active, they should be okay. I'm always a little wary of an older candidate applying only to the very best because it's a little tricky. So
I think that's a very good assessment, Graham.
All right. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So here we have another ApplyWire entry. This person is applying to Georgetown, Harvard, MIT, Wharton, and Yale, hoping to start next fall. They've been working in finance and are thinking about a post-MBA career in consulting or asset management. GMAT score 730, GPA 2.9. 4 years of work experience, currently located in London, but hoping to land in DC or New York after business school. They mention in the notes that they attended a top 10 undergraduate institution. They worked for a couple of years at a hedge fund in New York City, And now we're working on an emerging markets consulting team for a Fortune 100 company out of their London office. This candidate has a CFA and is hoping to kind of continue working in global investment and development and maybe even get into politics in the long run. And they have a track record of doing political stuff, to date. So involved in kind of leadership positions there. Now, the big red flag here is the GPA. And they also shared the fact that they are half Native American and that they actually used to live on a reservation. So Alex, what do you make of this candidate? I mean, the GPA does stand out, and I know you had some dialogue with the candidate about that.
Yeah, I mean, if schools can get beyond this GPA, I think this is potentially a super strong candidate. But clearly the GPA is going to be a bit of an issue. I also think, you know, from the fact that the candidate's essentially a bootstrapper type candidate, right? So that, you know, during college they held a minimum wage job to sort of support themselves. They didn't have any sort of real parental support. So coming from that starting point to where they are now is super impressive in my mind. And it was interesting. I was reading something on, I think it was on Reddit or something today, about a profile of a candidate, and you know, they were similarly sort of a bootstrapper type candidate, and they'd just gotten into a top school somewhere, and they were currently at a top school, so Harvard or Stanford or wherever, something like that, and they sort of always thought it was a little bit over the top when the admissions officers would boast on how diverse this class is, and it's this, that, and the other, when 90-95% of them all came sort of from private school education to top tier undergrad to, you know, top whatever. So, you know, clearly they were diverse, maybe from a gender standpoint and from other metrics, but not diverse in terms of, you know, starting from, you know, almost zero, like a candidate like this potentially has done. And I do think schools really value that if they can find these types of candidates that can then really thrive in their program. And so I think the candidate shows evidence of that. Obviously, the 2.9 GPA is a big problem. The 7.30 GMAT is very good. So clearly, they're actually quite smart. I think the work experience, Graham, sounds fantastic, right? Am I right there? I mean, you know, a couple of years hedge fund in the US, in New York City, that sounds very good. And then going off to London and working for a couple of years and doing some kind of consulting work. But I mean, that sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, I'm was struck by the kind of contrast in this candidate of, you know, kind of like you said, there's this sort of aspect where they're growing up on a Native American reservation, and, you know, not a lot of support from the parents in terms of getting off to school and you know, maybe even financing school. So there's that aspect. And then you're kind of like, wow, hedge fund, now living in London, sort of jet set, you know, kind of side as well. So it's a really interesting contrast. I agree, the 2.9 is a big ouch. I would like to know what the split was on the GMAT, even though 7.30 is a great score.
But Graham, it's a big ouch. I get that. But as an ADCOM, I wouldn't be concerned whether this person has the chops to handle the curriculum.
True. Yeah. And I think, again, I agree. I think that they could be a compelling candidate in part because of the fact that they're half Native American. And that's a huge bucket that's hard to fill for schools. And so that helps a lot. And I think, as you say, you know, the GMAT score is good. They've gone off and done interesting work. They would need to explain this GPA in a way, and you actually had some back and forth on this too, because you suggested they didn't take the right approach in explaining it.
Well, they explained it and they gave some good, I think some good reasons for it. Again, holding minimum wage job during the school, athlete, lots of student groups, lots of other stuff going on. And then the sort of the admission, I never thought I'd be going to grad school, so I didn't think the GPA would be important. I just would not include that in that optional essay as an additional point. I would keep that to myself.
That's almost like, you know, you get caught stealing something. You're like, well, I didn't think anyone was looking.
Yeah.
So I would not say, I would not say, yeah, I would definitely avoid that. Because what if I'm an admissions officer looking at it, I'm like, well, wait a second. This is their last degree, you know, business school. So does that mean they really don't care about how they're going to do in the classroom or what, right? So, yeah. But I think this person with an honest explanation of the struggles that they faced in even getting to college, and then the fact that they had to work while they attended college, and that they spread themselves too thin, should be enough. I mean, obviously, it'd be great to see some sort of an upward trend in the GPA, but hard to know here. But again, interesting candidate, and I think they have a range of schools too, so that's always helpful.
I neglected to mention in the comments, but reviewing it, getting ready for this for the wiretaps, I wonder if they could be a little bit more focused on their goals. They said, I think you read it out. Looking to continue working in global investment development and eventually go into politics seems still quite broad and a bit vague. So I'd want to get a bit more insight about the goals and really get an understanding of, all right, now why my school, whether it's Wharton or MIT, there's a couple of the schools that they picked, how does our MBA program really help you to achieve, you know, a more concrete set of goals coming out of the school? So hopefully the candidate really has thought about that a little bit harder than appears in terms of what they've just written here, which is completely understandable. They've just got a little note section to share stuff. But yeah, if they could develop their goals a little further in the application, I think that would be very helpful. I do think, Graham, this is a sort of candidate that admissions office is going to look at and say, I want to try to admit this person. Now, I just need to justify that sense by, you know, making sure, one, the 2.9 GPA won't repeat itself, so provide the evidence for that. And that's basically the main thing I need to overcome.
Yeah, agreed. And great feedback on the goals. Like, this candidate needs to be able to say to an admissions officer, what's the role, title, you know, whatever that they want post-MBA with maybe a few different firms that might offer that to them? And then what's the long-term plan? Like, why politics? What might the platform be that they're passionate about? It'd just be helpful to know. Beyond that, the only last tidbit of advice I would say is that I would be looking carefully at the reference letters on this candidate too, to make sure that there's kind of, you know, work ethic, all that stuff that, you know, might be triggered by the 2.9. So I would just be looking for strong letters of reference. Like you say, looking for any excuse to hear that this person is a great candidate, et cetera. So, all right, should we move on to our final profile review for this week?
Sounds good.
So let's talk about Wiretaps candidate number 3. So as we've been doing the last couple of weeks, this is a decision wire entry, and this candidate does not know where they want to go. They were admitted to a handful of schools, which includes Arizona State with $100,000, Minnesota Carlson also with $100,000, UT Austin with $10,000 scholarship, and Vanderbilt Owen with $80,000 in scholarship dollars. They're obviously starting school next fall. They were waitlisted at MIT Sloan, and their post-MBA career goal is in consulting. They mentioned BCG and Deloitte as two potential targets. GMAT score was 720, GPA 3.1, located in Kansas. And you know, this person mentions that, you know, that the scholarships are basically full tuition at ASU Cary and at Minnesota Carlson. And they want to end up in Minnesota post-graduation, again, working in consulting. So I gave him some feedback. Alex, what do you make of this? I mean, obviously, that's a lot of dollars that they've racked up in total scholarships. We should have a contest on the site where we look at, like, which decision wire entry got the most money in total, because that's a lot of money. But yeah, what do you make of this?
I mean, I think your advice was spot on. Obviously, your feedback was spot on decision wire. I mean, if you're getting that kind of money from a place like Minnesota Carlson, and you want to work in Minnesota, that's what they say. Ultimate goal, to end up in Minnesota post-graduation in a consulting role. I'm not sure how many people have that ambition in life. Well, I'm kidding. Obviously, it's a very nice place. I'm just a poor football team now. I'm sure it's a good football team, but I mean, we've talked about this before, Graham. The importance of geography when you're selecting a school. If you know where you want to be geographically post MBA, that really does help you refine your school selection and choices. And in this case, if you know that you want to be in Minnesota and you know that the alumni network's quite strong and deep in Minnesota from Carlson, it makes Carlson a very, very compelling choice, I think. And especially given, you know, the other schools listed, you know, some would argue, well, actually, you know, on national rankings, you know, maybe UT McCombs is higher ranked, maybe not terribly far higher, but maybe higher by, we would call it a tier or two. Vanderbilt may be ranked slightly higher, Carey and whatever. But that becomes much less relevant when you know geographically where you want to be. Then it's a case of, well, look at McCombs. What's its network? What does that look like in Minnesota? And how does that Texas-Minnesota network compare to Minnesota's Minnesota network, right? And that's what this can should be comparing. And then obviously they have the $100,000 to sweeten the pot. So to me, that looks obvious. And then we get into this other issue, Graham, and we've talked about this actually just before coming on to record this podcast. They were waitlisted at MIT. So what's interesting about that is, one, they should definitely push that waitlist. I mean, if they get an offer at MIT, that does change, because you've got a brand, an M7 brand, that's going to be real influential, I think, no matter where you want to work in the United States, relative to schools maybe three or four tiers down, right? So whilst I really think, you know, the Carlson brand in Minnesota sets you up really well, you know, the Sloan brand is still super compelling, right? I mean, you would agree with that, would you, Graham? I mean, it's like two or three tiers above in that case.
Right. Yeah. So I think it was really interesting that this person's waitlisted at MIT, and I would encourage them to fight for that spot.
But then that opens up another question, right, Graham? What's the candidate's round two strategy? Because it seems like, you know, if they're waitlisted at MIT, so that's an M7 program, they've got all this scholarship money coming out of what it, essentially a top 20 to 30 type programs. I think that's fair to say. Maybe McCombs is slightly higher than that, but it's in that range. Why didn't this candidate apply to a few schools in between, like Ross, you know, top 16 programs, Ross, Darden, Duke, you know, programs like that? And maybe the conversation should it be Carlson or Ross? And maybe Ross is a good option in Minnesota. Maybe even Kellogg. I think you mentioned Kellogg when we were discussing this candidate. And Kellogg may be a good option, given they want to work in Minnesota.
You gave them this great advice of, like, I was very focused on where they gotten in and, you know, working the wait list at Sloan and then going to one of the others if they don't get in. But you made this great point of, like, gee, what if you throw an application in round two to a Ross? That might yield a positive result. And Ross being in the Midwest might actually, you know, be an easy placement leap to get you to Minnesota. And then I thought, well, yeah, what about Kellogg too? I mean, Kellogg's a great school for consulting placements in the first place. And the other thing that I wanted to mention relates to both MIT and Kellogg and Ross as well, is that these are schools that have BCG and all the top, you know, consulting firms coming to campus, spending a lot of time recruiting. And my suspicion is that they're probably pretty delighted when they run into a candidate, you know, at Ross or Kellogg or Sloan, who says, I want to work for you, BCG, and I really want to work in Minneapolis. And, you know, because it's not that common, as we say. And I mean, full disclosure, Alex happens to be a Green Bay Packers fan. So that was why I think you're making the comment about the football team. But I'm a big fan of Minneapolis. I used to be on a board of a company that was located there. Great city. So I understand someone's desire to want to be there. Although when it was like negative 50, I remember wondering why I was on the board. But in any event, it's, you know, so there is a compelling story there for a top consulting firm at any M7 type school. Like, I think if you're, you know, so I think they do trump the local, even though Carlson has this amazing network locally and arguably is viewed as being, you know, outside of like top 10 type schools, it's probably the next best thing. I mean, because it just got such a great local network in the business community there. So yeah, this is a really interesting case. My view, if I had to be completely prescriptive with this person, I would say, take your spot at Carlson. It's a free ride. Work the waitlist at Sloan, and maybe if you have the energy, throw in an app to Ross or Kellogg or both in round two and see what comes back. I mean, I think we didn't talk about it, but this candidate does have one potential blemish, which is that 3.1 GPA. So it's a little low, but, you know, look, they made the waitlist at Sloan, so something must have clicked there, and they probably had a really compelling application. But that's my take on this one. I mean, I think it represents, it's a great discussion piece because, A, it's a whole bunch of different schools. There's a lot of money involved. They got a waitlist situation and a potential kind of round two strategy. So there's a lot of moving parts. And this is why we love DecisionWire entries. And we want to, you know, obviously encourage everyone to throw them up on the site because we love reading them and weighing in.
And I would just add, Graham, all the work this candidate's done for round one pays dividends if they want to apply in round two, because frankly, putting an application together now, it will be, I would argue, a stronger application than in your first round applications, because you've, it's a learning curve. They really know themselves better now through this application process. And frankly, the admissions essays aren't too terribly different, you know, with some of these schools. So they've, you know, whatever essays Ross has, they've probably answered somewhere along the line with the five or six schools they've already applied to. So the, you know, this effort that they need to put in to put a couple of applications together in round two is, you know, it's effort, and they've got to get their recommenders back on board. I understand that, but it's not the same as applying right out of the get-go.
Yeah, fair enough. So with that, this kind of draws to a close our episode of Wiretaps. I did want to wish everyone, if you're celebrating, a wonderful Christmas holiday happening later this week. Alex and I are committed to continuing to record Wiretaps, so we're going to, we'll actually find a way to get together right after Christmas and record another episode for the new year. And yeah, just keep these coming out every week, since we know many of you enjoy listening on your Monday mornings. But Alex, any final thoughts as we wrap up today?
No, Merry Christmas to everyone celebrating that particular holiday. And yeah, it's you know, good luck, everybody. I know this is a very tense, intense sort of time of year for candidates applying to top MBA programs. But now some of you are starting to see the fruits of the benefits of this quite rigorous process. So congratulations to those folks, and hang in there, everyone else that's still in play, as it were.
Yeah, excellent advice. And thanks again, Alex, for joining me and for picking out all these profiles to review. And we'll see everyone on the next episode of Wiretaps.
Very good. Take care.